And thanks for joining us on Talk Back Thursday edition. We are shifting gears. We have folks in the studio, the part of the Montana World Affairs Council, the tall and incredibly handsome Bob Seidenschwartz over there. Hey, Tom, how you doing, Bob? He's fine. Okay, all right.
Thank you for that very nice introduction. Peter really needs to get his glasses recalibrated again.
Peter doesn't call everybody handsome, Bob. You should take it in stride.
I'll
accept the compliment.
I have Feiple vocals. or whatever they're called. But anyway, we have folks in studio today. We have Byron Boots. He's a junior majoring in business with emphasis on international business and management information systems. Last week, he was the chair of the Montana Model UN Security Council. That committee considered, and Byron's ready to talk about, says here in parentheses, I'm not supposed to say that, sorry, the situation in Iraq, global warming as a security issue. And Sydney Austin is with us. She's a junior majoring in political science with a concentration in international relations and comparative politics and a minor in international development studies. She was the chair of the General Assembly Second Committee in charge of economic issues. The issues the students debated on that committee were biodiversity and development, intellectual property rights, etc., etc. So, and we
debating
also
debating, etc., is always
yes,
fun.
And Karen Adams is also with us in studio today, and that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us.
You might remember Karen from not too long ago.
Yes, she
was the Nostradamus of the modern age.
That's right.
Ooh, I like that.
You like
add that?
That
to my CV.
So, who's going to talk first? Everybody's studiously staying away from the microphone. Yeah. So,
well, how about if I tell you a little bit about the Montana Model UN Conference to
Go
get
for
kicked
it.
Off?
Thank you.
So, this was our 49th year. The University of Montana has sponsored this high school conference since 1966. And this year we had 380 high school students from 19 high schools in Montana and Idaho. And they came to UM for Monday and Tuesday last week, debated world issues, heard talks by faculty advisors, and Byron and Sydney chaired two of the committees. So they're ready to talk about what they noticed the students being interested in debating, what kind of resolutions they came up with, that sort of thing.
Just fundamentally, because I've never participated in a Model UN, like, are the kids supposed to take on the role of whatever country they represent?
Byron, go ahead.
Yeah, they take on the role of whichever country they're supposed to represent. Obviously, it's a little different just because all the students have a sort of an American bias on American media influence on all the issues that we're debating and whatnot. But each student is supposed to take on the role of their individual nation, which
now,
is really interesting.
How many countries? Is it just like the real United Nations with all the countries in the world represented or what?
Well, we had about 110 countries last week.
Okay.
And there are 193 countries at the UN. Some of those countries are pretty small.
Yeah.
Like one school was given the Marshall Islands, and I got an email about a month before the conference saying, you know, we can't really find very much about the Marshall Islands.
Well, see, if I was going to the Model United Nations, I would want to represent Djibouti.
Oh, you would? Really?
Well, because it's such a cool name.
That's true. I was in Austin last month, and I met a taxi cab driver from Djibouti. I learned quite a bit about Djibouti.
Well, there you go.
Tell the audience where Djibouti is.
Well, it's in Africa.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people didn't know that.
Well, there you go. So, okay, Sydney, let's get you on the microphone there.
Well,
all right.
Just on that note, it would be quite hilarious to hear a delegate say that every time that they address the dais and their fellow delegates, they have to say the delegate from Djibouti motions to or whatever. And so that would be quite comical.
Trust me, Peter's Djibouti has a lot of motion. More motion than necessary.
Than anybody would ever dream of. All right. So let's talk about the actual things you guys did. So Byron, grab the microphone. It says here that you were, chair of the Montana Model UN Security Council. So what kind of things did you discuss? Obviously, things like, you know, hotspots in the world, the Middle East, Russia, things like that, right?
Yeah. So it's really interesting with the Security Council because there's kind of the premier body of the United Nations. So they get to... they can actually mandate things, whereas all of the General Assembly, plenary, and subcommittees, they only get to suggest things for countries to do. Hmm. And so the Security Council has a little bit more force, but
you get to draft strongly worded letters.
Yeah, exactly.
We are using our darkest ink for this one.
Which is really cool to watch the students use that power, especially because a lot of the students have been in the General Assembly before, once they come to the Security Council at the Montana Model UN. But that also comes with a lot of issues, because with the P5 members, a lot of students are wary of how they word their resolutions to avoid the veto power.
P5.
So permanent five members of the UN Security Council. So that would be the US, the UK, China, Russia, and France. And so they all have veto power. So any resolutions that come through that they don't like, they just veto off and they fail. And that really limits a lot of the 10 other countries' power when it comes to bargaining on issues in the Security Council, which were pretty hot this year with the situation in Iraq being heavily debated. That's what our committee focused most of the time on. And we sort of made up a mock crisis in that time as well that the students got to focus on with. We made up the crisis that Baghdad was under siege in Iraq, and that
by perhaps ISIS, maybe?
Yeah, by ISIS, ISIL. And that made for some more concrete events happening that the students had to deal with, and they pretty generally agreed upon some sort of military action.
Ooh. So, but did the Russian delegate veto that?
That wasn't vetoed by either Russia or China, as I would have foreseen, which goes back to delegates potentially having a little bit too much influence from their hometown and or home country, and so therefore they didn't.
I'm sure the atrocities in Baghdad were really horrible.
Yeah.
And even Russia had to agree.
We are going to take a break. We'll be right back. If you have a question or comment for these young people, give us a call, 721-1290. We'll be right back.
The larger countries.
We're back on Talkback, 721-1290. Okay, let's get Karen back to the microphone, because I want to get a little bit more details about the event itself. Now, the high school kids were actually the delegates.
Yes.
Okay, and these college students are actually in your class. This is part of your class, what they were doing.
That's right. I teach a class in the political science department on the UN and diplomacy. So we spent the semester learning about the structure of the UN and preparing for the conference. Mm-hmm. And then the culminating event is for the students in my class to staff these committees. So that's what they did last week.
All right. Now, tell me about the high school students. They weren't graded for this, but they could receive awards, right?
They did receive awards, yes. About the top 20% of the students are recognized in one way or another. So several weeks before the conference, students have to turn in position papers explaining what positions their countries would take on the two issues before their committee.
How do they get their countries? Is it just lottery, or they pick one they want? Or?
Well, we give them countries.
Okay.
Yes. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
This is your country.
That's right.
And there's a song in there. I just know.
That way, if schools come back, we've had some schools who've come for as many as 30 years. And so each time a school comes back, they get a different set of countries. So the teacher has an experience learning about different countries, and the students do as well. Some students come all 4 years of high school.
So they don't know when they get there what countries they'll be assigned.
Oh, no, they know that.
Well,
we tell them that in early September.
Okay, all right.
So they spend September learning about their countries, and then usually they work on the topics in October, and then practice their debating skills in November before the conference.
Okay, so when it gets to the show, right? Everyone's there. Russia, France, all the fun people are there.
That's right.
The actual ranking for who gets these awards, is it based on passion, accuracy to how that country actually operates?
Or is there any, like Bob said, is there any corruption going on?
Oh, yeah,
can you buy off an award?
Well, speaking as the one who oversees the award process, let me just
say,
we've reduced that over the years.
How about some, like a plate of cookies?
We don't take any bribes. Of course not. So each of these students, Sydney and Byron, were responsible with their staff for identifying the top 10% of delegates in each of the five sessions that we had. And so those students went into a pool of students who then were eligible for the awards. And if they did well on their position papers, then they ended up with that. So let me have Sydney tell you a little bit about what she thought about.
Are you bribable, Sydney?
Definitely not bribable.
Okay, so what are you looking for a quality?
So as the chair, you sit at the front of the or stand at the front of the room, and any time delegate wishes to be recognized and they raise their hand, somebody marks that down, like this delegate spoke.
So a lot of it's participation.
A lot of it's participation, and then when it actually comes to the resolution process, I was very interested in those delegates that were sort of championing their issues.
Did you discover any burgeoning statesmen or stateswomen that you say just kind of stood up and said, wow, this person really has done their homework. They found a cause that they really believe in. This is very important to them. And so it got them high marks.
Definitely. And those were the students that I chose to be the highest ranking delegates that got
Can you give me any specific examples?
There was a young woman from Coeur d'Alene, and she was representing the country Lithuania, which I thought was a little bit of a difficult country to represent, a little bit smaller. But she just really, every opportunity she could was...
Spoke with as much passion as Max Spock, as I'm sure. It's a high bar.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the table that you were working with, what was the issue at hand? I think Byron mentioned Iraq and a sudden attack on Baghdad from ISIS. What was your issue?
So the General Assembly's Second Committee handles economic and finance, and we had the topics of intellectual property rights and biodiversity and development. And it really came as no surprise that biodiversity and development was the topic at hand. Most students preferred to talk about.
Explain, if you would, some of the arguments that came out with biodiversity.
A lot of the arguments that came out were developing countries trying to call upon the developed countries to act on climate change or to finance these resolutions that were calling for protection of biodiversity and protection of resources and just like a lack of – or to stop exploiting the developing countries. And
what was the response of the developed countries?
Little response, actually, which goes along with countries not representing their delegates not representing their country to the fullest extent.
That happens a lot in the real world, too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's face it. I mean, at the UN, a lot of countries are asking for money in various ways, and a lot of rich countries say no. That's pretty common.
So, Sydney, give an example. When you're talking about the countries on the developing side, What is biodiversity as they're defining it? What are some of the projects that they were actually looking at, and what were some of the resolutions?
Go ahead. Yeah.
World, but the developing nations.
So the developing nations were calling upon, like the premier resolution that I really thought was the best resolution was signed and sponsored by developing nations, asking the developing world to fund projects that would educate the public on climate change and the loss of biodiversity within member states. So,
did you find any climate change deniers among your UN delegates?
Not outwardly.
Really?
No.
Okay. Because there are a lot in this country, right?
Correct.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm curious. Go ahead.
Well, let me just say there was also a climate change issue on the Security Council that Byron's committee dealt with, the question of whether climate change is a security issue. You know, this October, the Defense Department elevated climate change to a high-level immediate threat to Defense Department assets and also to security interests worldwide. So this was the issue, one of the issues that they were talking about actually on the Security Council.
So Byron, tell us how that discussion went.
That was really interesting for me because I expected there to be a lot more substantive debate on it, but a lot of the delegates moved and passed resolutions to send the global warming as a security issue back to the General Assembly so that every nation in the United Nations could be involved as opposed to just the 15 on the Security Council, which was really interesting because I don't think that would necessarily happen. However...
So basically what I hear you saying is in the real world, they would have sent that communication back basically to die in the General Assembly, right?
I don't think they would have sent it back at all. I think they would have just left it with the Security Council so that the P5 could veto their way through. It did pass that they would send it back to the General Assembly after one more year of debate in the Security Council, which was different than what I had planned.
All right. I think when it first started, a lot of people saw the UN as the future savior of the world, and now it seems like the United Nothing, a body that writes strongly written letters, as we've joked about earlier. And I want to hear from both of you. Is there something structurally wrong with the UN that you would change?
And we'll take a break, come right back and answer that, because I'm the commercial sheriff. So I get to be the chairman of the General Assembly. We'll be right back in just a minute.
Okay, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us on Talk Back. We are back. That's John King. I'm Peter Christian. Bob Seidenschwartz joining us here this morning. Also in the studio, we have Sydney Austin, Byron Boots, and Karen Adams. Now, you just asked a question before.
Yeah. You got to see a lot of the structure, how things actually work, or at least the way we model the United Nations and how it works. Did you find any significant flaws, things that you'd change to make the real United Nations work better?
Byron.
So because of my mismanagement of time at the end of the committee, I actually got to hear and talk with the high school students a little bit about my thoughts on this. And I guess what I had come up with is that I don't believe that Security Council reform is something that needs to happen in the same capacity that is popularly believed. And that, you know, we need to rearrange the P5 or not have a P5, because I don't think that that's something that is feasible with, I mean, you can't crash any of the P5 economies and expect the world economy to sustain. And so, you know, they need the ability to defend themselves from being in the fact that they are, you know, world premier powers or world superpowers. But
to your point, if it's all based on economies, I mean, some of economies change over time, so it doesn't make a lot of sense to just have it fixed, right?
Yeah, and so I think that when one of the things that I looked at more this conference, specifically in the Security Council, was that with the changing of the economies and whatnot, none of the P5 economies have become any, in my opinion, less relevant worldwide. It's just that others have come up to them, and so it's not that the playing field has, you know, been rearranged. It's just that it's gotten a little bit bigger.
If I, just as an American, if my government were structured in the way that Kentucky and four other states had a stronger representation simply because they were those states at the time that this committee was formed, I would have a problem with that. And I think lots of people in the world do.
Yeah. And so that's the hitch, I guess. I mean, smarter minds than myself have thought about this for a long time. But I guess, I do believe that that's a significant issue, that they do have those veto powers and whatnot, but I don't think that the issue is necessarily removing their veto power or doing a lot of Security Council reform in that manner. It's just, I think the best way would be to give the General Assembly more power as opposed to removing power from the Security Council.
Gotcha. Do you agree with him, Sydney?
I do agree.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, and I would just add that as the supreme body of the United Nations, resolutions passed by the Security Council are binding. Resolutions passed by the subcommittees are not. And I think that that is a structural flaw, and that those resolutions are often dealing with issues that are contributing to, like, systemic peace and prosperity, and therefore should be taken just as seriously as resolutions passed by the Security Council.
So let me ask you in 30 seconds, what specifically, Sydney, because that's our time limit, what did you learn from this?
I learned that through the procedures of the United Nations, parliamentary procedure, delegates can talk a lot and do not a lot. But that it's very important, and that I think that the model United Nations is a great way to sort of rehabilitate the esteem of the United Nations.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. Actually, it's a six-minute break at the top of the hour for Fox News, and we'll come right back, continue this great discussion here on TalkBack. If you want to join us, give us a call at 721-1290. Welcome back. Hour number two of TalkBack underway, brought to you by Bitterroot Motors, Temprite Service, Selway Armory, and by The Mustard Seed. The body will come to order. How's that?
Dunk, dunk, dunk.
Okay, I can go home now.
Now, can I throw my shoe at you?
We will bury you. Okay, who said that? Who said that? You can't.
Wasn't it Nikita Khrushchev who banged his shoe
banged
on the,
shoe on the table? Yeah.
But what is it that's so insulting in the Arabic world about showing somebody your shoe? We're waving that at them.
Tell us, Bob.
Come get on the microphone.
Bob is talking from the hallway.
I don't know the answer to that.
I'll let you look that up.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So here we are. We're talking with folks from the University of Montana, Sydney Austin, Byron Boots, and Karen Adams, and, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council. The Model UN was last week?
Yes.
It was last week. Okay. And the high schoolers from all over Montana and actually the western region here brought in to representatives of the various countries in the United Nations.
I have a quick question. It seems to me that there should be a model U.S. Why not? I mean, it's a much more important body of government.
Oh, there's lots
and
of
it
model
has
US's.
Much more influence over the children. So do you plan or do you have something like that going?
Isn't that lots of that already.
Isn't that what boys' state and girls' state
right,
all
exactly.
about?
Exactly. Boys' state, girls' state, youth in government. There's a lot of that. And they're great. In fact, that was what got me interested in political science as a student.
Really?
So we're providing a sort of international antidote to that.
Gotcha. So do any international students, representatives, get involved with the students at all in this process? I mean, we have the Mansfield Center here. Mm-hmm. I know I've been to campus. I meet Japanese kids randomly and surprise them by speaking Japanese. Okay. And the you know, they're all over the place. And I'm sure they would be interested in some of the discussion.
Hey, Sydney, go ahead.
So the first night of conference, we actually have a region night that delegates can attend. And there were five rooms, I believe, and multiple people from foreign countries in those rooms giving a presentation on their country. And it was really interesting for delegates to be able to go talk to them if they were representing that country and find out a little bit more about the country they represent.
Were they surprised about the things that they assumed and didn't know and the things that they learned about that country that go ahead, Byron.
Yeah, I think some of the students were pleasantly or unpleasantly surprised at how much or little they knew about the region.
right.
I think I was the sort of chair, whatever leadership title you want to put on it, for the Americas room, and there was a delegate that spoke, or an international student from Brazil that spoke, and an international student from Colombia that spoke. And it was cool to listen to the delegates, the high school students, ask them questions about their home country, and then especially the student from Brazil, ask him questions about how Brazil, you know, influences the rest of South America and whatnot. So that was interesting to hear.
I was curious, you know, every generation has a little bit of a different tenor based on the media that they grow up watching. You know, my generation, we went through college in the Bush era. It's very different than my parents or the generation before me that grew up under Reagan or Clinton. And so I'm curious, did you find just you, this small gap in age between you and these high schoolers, did you find a difference in the way they approach topics?
Is there culture shock?
I think there's definitely, there's definitely some differences. I'm not sure. I mean, tying it back to the situation in Iraq on the Security Council, it was really interesting how willing all the delegates seemed to be to have some sort of military action for our made-up crisis in Baghdad, which I don't. I'm not sure that my
My generation, I would say, would probably be, you know, starting my generation and for about 7 years ago, they would probably be very hesitant to do anything in Iraq.
Yeah.
But anything above my generation and this new generation, I think, would say, yeah, we need to get in Baghdad. We need to protect Baghdad.
Yeah. And so I think that was something that I noticed that maybe I'm just out of touch with the rest of my generation, but I just didn't view them. I didn't see them, or I wouldn't have been so supportive of military action in Iraq with the crisis that was presented with the facts that I was given and whatnot. Hmm. But they were, I mean, you know, the heat of the moment, they were all for.
What was the tenor of the military force they chose to use? Was it just a bombing raid or was it actual ground troops? What was it?
Yeah, it was boots on the ground of coalition forces that that member states could volunteer. So essentially whoever wanted to volunteer people could volunteer, and essentially you could have a military, you know, invasion of Iraq.
Go ahead, Karen.
I want to say that's a very typical Security Council resolution, right? So the students have talked about how Security Council resolutions are binding. So a binding resolution that anybody who wants to go and do something about this, please feel free.
We have decided if you want to queue up in a line, you can do so here.
All right,
America,
now,
Canada, Australia,
One of the things that I think that people learn as they get older and become more mature and really get into diplomatic situations is they learn the art of the possible, okay? So, but high school kids, they are idealistic. They're passionate. They have imaginations that run, if you will, run wild beyond the capabilities of what any particular country can do. So, did you find that, or Byron, the Security Council? I mean, did you find that their passion ran ahead of their, you know, the sense that hasn't quite come yet?
I definitely found that they were so passionate, and I thought that this experience was so good for them to realize that you can be very, very passionate about issues and be standing here in America very frustrated that nothing is happening. But it's so much more complicated than that. And they really got to see that in procedure at this conference, that it involves so much more than just passion. And
what,
I think,
what issue engendered the most passion?
In my committee, biodiversity and development, for sure.
On what part of it? I mean, like, that's a pretty big topic. So, like,
the biodiversity part, I think the loss of biodiversity generated a much more passion than the development aspect, which was interesting being an economic committee.
Okay, cool. All right, we're up against a break. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. We will be right back. Hey, we're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number. We have Brian Boots, Sydney Austin, and Karen Adams, a Model UN. We've been discussing. Now, Bob, get over to the microphone so we can actually hear you. You had a very interesting question for these folks.
Yeah, as you're describing this enthusiasm for the resolution that said, let's put boots on the ground, military action, what, if any, were the follow-up discussions in terms of once the military component was successful, if that was the assumption, then what was the follow-through? What was some of the significance in terms of what they were proposing after the military action?
Yeah, so when they proposed the military action, their plan for withdrawal was pretty simple in that they were going to stay just as long as was needed and then get out of there, which, I mean, I don't think anybody necessarily understands all of the impacts
Who determines that? That's the question.
Yeah, and so that was determined by luckily, I was glad that they thought ahead as opposed to just, you know, as soon as the job is done and left it open-ended. They said as soon as ISIS, who had invaded Baghdad in our crisis, was 5 miles outside of the border of Baghdad and all of Baghdad had been secured, then at that time they would withdraw, which I think 5 miles was a little oversight of, you know, how far 5 miles is. But the idea of, you know, we just want, like, we're not here to solve the entire situation in Iraq through military action. We're here only to, you know, secure Baghdad, because we understand that if Baghdad falls to ISIS, that that's a much larger issue for the Middle East and the world.
Well, I think we're about to wrap up. One of the things I wanted you to both touch on, for parents out there that are considering, or maybe students that hopefully are in school, but are considering doing the Model UN, what would you say are the big things that they'll take away from this experience? And for University of Montana students, okay, for participating in it as well.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that they get to meet students like Byron and I, who are passionate about international affairs, and see the way that you can pursue that at the University of Montana, and meet our faculty members that are so important in the political science department, the international business department, and just explore those options for further education.
Or you could just listen to TalkBack, kids.
Absolutely.
You could.
Either way.
Go ahead.
For me, this has been the only political science or political real course that I've taken at the university, and I wouldn't be involved in the political science department at all if it wasn't for this course. So I think it's really cool for incoming students, current students, parents, whatever, that to understand that, you know, politics, as deterring as it can be sometimes to talk about and deal with, this is a really good way to get involved in that. And then in addition to that, when you are involved with this, you get to learn so much about compromise, you know, working with others. When you tell two people or two groups of people that they have to merge their resolutions to build one larger one, to view that compromise and to view the skills that they learn to deal with people that they've just met the day before is pretty cool.
Karen, I would like you to address the whole idea of leadership, because one of the things that, you know, Boy State, Girl State, Model UN, all these things deal with leadership.
Right.
And I guess the question is, are these leaders, are they born, are they made, are they developed, or is it a kind of an amalgam there, or what?
Oh, I love the nature-nurture debate. I think it can happen both ways. I think some students just have sort of native talent and a big reservoir of confidence, and other students need to be sort of nurtured. And so, you know, you can see both kinds. One of the reasons I love Model UN, I've done it now for 10 years, and I get to see my students move up the ranks. So Byron, for example, this is his second year. It's fun to think back on Byron being in my class last year and what he was able to do differently this year, back next year to be in a higher leadership position.
What did he get? Can you tell us his grade?
Oh, Byron always does well. But I want to say
very
something.
Cleverly done.
There
by
you go. How do you like that? That may mean Professor Adams doesn't actually remember very much of that right now.
I know that's not true. She has an uncanny memory.
One of the things I noticed that my students in the UN class learn that I think is really important is not only that it is really hard to forge agreement, but also that the UN may not be the place that is most beneficial for them to invest their time. You know, a lot of them think that they want to work for the UN as an ambassador or work for the U.S. State Department, something like that. And once they've been through the negotiations and the deliberations, they begin to think more about alternatives, like working for non-governmental organizations or working for the U.S. government. You can get a lot more done in American government, believe it or not, than you can at the UN.
There's a lot of slogging going on.
That's right. Well, yeah. They're slogging in all kinds of governments, right? And, you know, sometimes working in the private sector to work on issues like biodiversity loss or climate change, other issues that are important, poverty, economic growth. Those are obviously not as conducive to a big international deliberation as you might think.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in today, guys.
Now, what I'd like to ask is, and Karen, you can probably provide this information. If there are parents out there or folks in high school or maybe homesick today and they want to learn more about this program and they want to be a part of it, what do they do?
Well, Google Montana Model UN. You'll find our website. We'll run the conference again next year. We'd love to have more high schools. We'd love to have more students come and take my Model UN class at the university.
Now, is this only for public schools, private schools?
Oh, no. Private schools, public schools, homeschools. We had a homeschool from Ravalli. So we get a real variety of students.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all for your participation, and you get an A in our book. But who cares?
Thanks for having us.
But who cares what we are doing?
Actually, if our name is anywhere near your book, it's a bad grade. So I would run away from that as quickly as possible.
You were on Talkback at the bottom of the resume. All right. Thanks, guys. We're going to take